Oh, look, spicy, peachy, battered chunga. Oh, that would be a spicy, lightly battered peach and a delicious, chewy chonga.
What the hell is a chonga?
Hey, well, come on, leave him alone. He's just getting into it. Try this one, Crow.
Oh, chickeny Gatorade Arita. Yeah. Crispy dead chicken Gatorade marinade all wrapped in a tasty, toasty Taquerito pita.
Ooh. War of the Colossal Beast.
Yeah.
So... let's not bury the lead. This is the one with Mr. B Natural.
Yeah, it sure is.
We did not realize that. At least I did not realize that.
Cotton form.
And so I was like, oh, War of the Colossal Beast. Because, you know, we watched some bad ones recently. And so I had you look up your personal rating from before the podcast for this. And it was a 7. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that'll be all right. And then it started and it was Mr. B Natural.
Yeah. Sometimes I think my ratings were like I was aggregating the shorts and the film was bad. I think without Mr. B Natural, this would be a completely forgettable episode of Mystery Science Theater. I even think that the skits the one skit they did after the short was the best skit, and then it just kind of went downhill once they actually started watching the movie. I started to think about like, would it have been smarter for them to, like, if you really cared about Mystery Science Theater and you weren't just like fucking around and you were trying to, you know, really make it into a great show, would you pair great, hilarious, amazing shorts like Mr. B Natural that are full of whimsy and madness with really good, like, you know, movies that you knew were going to be really entertaining for people? Or would you pair it with this crap? This War of the Worlds crap with the giant colossal dude because you want to make that better?
Well, I don't know the answer to your question, but a really interesting thing that I was just thinking about is I actually am not clear on why they watch shorts at all. I mean, of course, it may be because they're film buffs and they know that the tradition is to like watch a short before a movie in the old, super old days.
Also, I think one of the reasons they started watching shorts, although I don't think this ended up being like the reason forever, but like when they were watching, what was it, Commando Cody and Radar Men from the Moon, that series.
Right.
That was because they were choosing a lot of mostly movies from the 50s that were so short that they were actually shorter than the length of an episode that they needed to capture.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, because like, most of the movies are too long. They have to edit them down.
Yeah. Most movies are, you know, an hour and a half plus. But some really old movies, especially really bad B movies, are super short.
But I thought the whole point of the B movies was to pad time, like to occupy people's time in the theater.
Well, the whole point of padding is to make movies longer. But, you know, we were talking about this. This is something I didn't know about the definition of a B movie, that a B movie is actually called a B movie because it was paired with another movie that was like the A movie that was the better one. And so I think a lot of times they would just show the B movie first as like a, you can think of it about like an opener to a concert, you know, and the opener doesn't get as much time as the headliner. The headliner always gets like a half an hour more. So it would be like you watch an hour of a stupid B movie and then there's a little intermission and then you watch like an hour and a half good movie.
Okay, but why? I mean, wouldn't the whole point be to sell people on how much value they're getting, like for their dollar, you know, keep them in the theater for longer? Why wouldn't they be longer?
I think eventually, I don't know for sure, but I think eventually they did start making them longer and padding them more, but they learned to do that over time.
I mean, it's like the old apocryphal, at least I think it's apocryphal, Mark Twain thing, you know, where he's like, I'm sorry, this letter is so long, I didn't have time to make it shorter. I mean, it's not harder to make a longer movie. Just throw some more dialogue in there.
Yeah, but it might not have occurred to them right away. It might have taken a little practice for B movie studios to realize they could make more money. You know, it's like any money making endeavor, you kind of learn on the fly, right? And you get better at it over time.
Yeah.
Somebody was probably some studio executive at a B movie studio was probably sitting and watching one of his movies, and it just kind of like a little light bulb came on over his head, and he was like, God, you know, I could make more money if I just made these movies longer. You know, not more expensive to make, just longer.
Right. Right. So should we talk about the movie first or should we talk about the short?
I don't know, because you could make a whole episode of this podcast just about Mr. B Natural.
Yeah.
I think it's so famous that maybe it's one of the only things that, like, if this podcast gets a lot of listeners over time and they're Mystery Science Theater fans, it's the first thing, it's one of the three things. If you remember three things about Mystery Science Theater, you probably remember, you know, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. You probably remember, like, Space Mutiny, and you remember Mr.
No, Manos Hands of Fate.
Or Manos Hands of Fate, yeah. I mean, those are, like, the greatest hits. Like, those are the concert greatest hits, right?
Yeah, we were talking about how if you wanted to introduce somebody to the show, you could do worse than just show them Mr. Show B. Natural. Yeah. Because it has some really... This whole episode is a very much a Joel episode. Like, this is canonical Joel. It's so... absurdist in the kind of like Albert Camus tradition. It's just so out there.
Yeah.
You know,
the quintessential tone setting thing happens at the very beginning when they do the thing where he's doing pairing Taco Bell words together.
Yeah. The Emperor Hirohito Rito.
Yeah. Like that set the tone. You knew you were placed firmly in the middle of like the golden era of Joel being just a complete whacked out space nut.
So let me ask you about that, because we were talking about in the last episode how Mike was actually the head writer for a lot of these, but this is not Mike's style at all. Of course, Mike's in this episode as Glenn, and Mike plays things really straight. He's not an absurdist comic, but Joel is.
Yeah.
Did Mike write these jokes?
I don't know. I mean, I think one thing I'd say about good comedy writers is they write to their cast members, right? Like, you do modulate your writing depending on who you're writing for. So when he wrote for himself, he might have decided to write a little bit more authentically Mike than when he was writing for Joel.
But Joel is so Joel.
Yeah.
I can't imagine giving Joel lines. Can you?
Sure. I mean, I think writing was always a group effort for them. I don't think there was ever one guy in the cast or in the background that was like writing the majority of the lines. I think they pooled their resources quite a bit.
I don't know, though. I mean, it would be like if you got your first script writing gig and they told you it was for Christopher Walken.
Yeah, well, I mean, but people did write scripts for Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I guess so. But that guy's just going to do whatever the hell he wants, don't you think?
A really good writer finds a way to write in the authentic voice of whoever's being cast. You know, like you write for a TV show, you really get to know the characters and the actors, and you try really hard to create a voice around them. And I think if Mike was a really good writer, probably what he did is he learned to write in Joel's voice, you know? Which I think is something that you can do if you're smart.
So what's your favorite Mr. B Natural riff?
I like when they're at the prom. I think it's a prom. I don't know. It's a little unclear. Some kind of school dance. And
the victory dance? The City High victory dance?
Yeah.
When they talk about how they're so white?
Yeah. They're like,
they sing the song, we're white. We're really, really white.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, and I like it when they show the perfectly like pinned down hair, and the kids in the background like staring at all of his friends, and they just go conform, like that's just great.
My favorite one is when he says that the other slightly more cool nerdy guy is like, "Oh, I'm bucking for the first chair," and mm-hmm. Crow is like, "Do you dare?"
Yeah. I have seen that thing like 20 times and I still was laughing out loud.
Yeah.
In fact, I was surprised at how funny it still
is. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the best things.
Even when you know what's coming, mm-hmm. it's up there with the best 10 minutes of comedy I've ever seen.
That entire sequence where Mr. B Natural appears to him in the bedroom and they're playing it. In the short, the kid's playing it straight, like he's curious and excited. But in the background, you just hear, mostly it's Tom Servo going like, "Oh, okay, I really don't want
to." Yeah.
Yeah, okay, nice lady. oh, God, back away. Oh, my
Mom.
God.
Mom!
Yeah, it's just so good. Because she is terrifying. I mean, she's sort of like, why is she in his bedroom?
Yeah.
And who is she?
Well, I was talking about, like, not to get over intellectualized. I remember I was reading... One time, this is a total aside, this has nothing to do with anything, but I was reading about somebody who was a music critic for Paul McCartney, And he was, you know, because the Beatles got so famous that, of course, all these music critics were taking their art super seriously, as if it was like really, really serious art. And one of the art critics was talking about, I think it was Yesterday, and he was saying something about how at the end there was like an irresolute plagal cadence. And somebody read that to Paul McCartney, and they were like, you know, this music critic says you have an irresolute plagal cadence at the end. And Paul McCartney was like, I don't know what that is, man. So I don't mean to over-intellectualize Mr. Be Natural, but I do feel like the essence of comedy is the release of tension. Mm-hmm. And there's so much tension in this short that it can't help but be funny.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It would be funny even without them riffing it, but of course they just kick it up another notch, right? Yeah. They point out the obvious tension, like the fact that it's Mr. Be Natural, but it's clearly a woman.
Clearly a woman.
And she's doing this, you know, dime store community theater, incredibly over energetic thing.
Yeah. Which you pointed out is like also a weird sort of riff on Peter Pan.
Right.
And that's kind of why it's a woman being a man.
Yeah, clearly. And I looked her up, this woman, and this is like one of the only things she ever did. You know?
Oh, that's so interesting.
Her life is super fascinating, but anyway, we don't have time to get into that. But look it up, folks. Like, look it up on Wikipedia. The woman that's in this thing is super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what I was saying when we were watching it is that it's obvious to me now, but I remember watching it for the first time, like in the 90s as like a kid. And going through the whole first half of it or first two thirds, you don't have any idea why they're doing it.
Right.
There's this mystery of like, why is any of this being filmed?
I think I kind of knew.
Did you?
Yeah.
And then you get to the music store and you see these giant logos for Con Limited Music, whatever, Incorporated. Right. And you're like, oh, it's enormous ad.
It's an ad.
It's just a giant advertisement.
Yeah.
For a musical instrument
company. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You were asking, and I actually don't know, and I'd be curious, like, where this was used. Like, did they show this in schools? Did they show it before movies? Was this played on TV?
Yeah.
Did the Con company pay TV stations to air this thing?
Or you were saying maybe they put it on before a movie in a theater.
I think they did do that kind of thing.
Well, so that's another thing that helps pad your, if you're trying to get people stuck in a theater for a long time, you know, and your little B movie's only an hour long, just stick a 15-minute commercial before.
Well, maybe this is my modern perspective and maybe I'm not being fair, but I have to assume that people in the 50s were just bored AF. And so if you showed up and said, I have this content I made and I'll let you have it for free, you can show it in your movie theater, that they would just show it.
Yeah.
They would just show it.
What I find really interesting is I actually think the more I've read about it, the more I think it's a realistic package that you would watch a really weird 15-minute commercial for a music instrument company called Mr. Be Natural with a cross-dressing Peter Pan. And then you would watch the colossal, amazing Beast Man, which is completely unrelated and stupid. And then after that, you would watch like Casablanca or something. And in one night, one long sitting.
That is some...
And you'd come home and that would be your some collected entertainment for the evening.
That is some creative whiplash.
It's bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why...
I mean, that's like watching Meet the Fockers and then watching, I don't know, freaking Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it is. Well, and we replicate that a little bit in this era that we're in now digitally, because we just sit on Netflix and we just watch random shit. Like, we watch a Christmas movie and then we're like, let's watch a horror movie now or something.
Right, but that's a change of genres, not a change of quality.
True, yeah, but you can also watch a bad movie next to a really good movie.
You
can watch two Adam Sandler films, one that's like, you know, Happy Gilmore, and the other one that's like one of his new, like, shitty.
I really want to dress up like Mr. Be Natural for Burning Man next year.
Yeah, you should.
I think that's key. Yeah. I think that needs to happen.
Somebody probably already has, but yeah, you should absolutely.
I mean,
should.
I want to wear tights and I want to wear that jumper with the music notes all over it.
Do you think somebody makes a Halloween costume of Mr. Be Natural?
God, I would hope so.
It's kind of a cult figure because of Mystery Science Theater.
I mean, I would hope so.
It might be Mystery Science Theater's, is it their most famous short ever? Possibly.
Their most famous short. Yes, probably.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the most famous episode, but no, the in short, terms though. Of shorts.
Well, that's the thing too, is I bet a lot of fans like you and I couldn't name the movie that it's paired with.
No,
they wouldn't
be able to
say, oh, it's,
I mean, I legit had no idea when the randomizer said it was War of the Colossal Beast. I was like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure I've ever seen that movie through to the end. I think I either just watched the short and moved to a different thing for my life,
yeah,
or I put the movie on, but I just fell asleep halfway through because that movie is really dull.
Boring.
Yeah. Really boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely Gray Men in a Gray Room.
I will say I fully predicted that they were going to shoot him down, the colossal beast, and he killed himself instead. And so I guess you could say theoretically.
Yeah, they surprised you. Me. Yeah.
But what I also said is, however this ends, it's going to be one of these sad, plodding, slow marches towards a depressing end that leaves you cold and unfeeling.
Well, during the movie, you and I were having this gentle debate where I was trying to stand up for the movie and not saying that it was good, but just saying that relative to the 1950s, this was about the best you could expect.
Yeah,
and you were like, no, this is trash. And you actually looked up some movies. You were like, oh, but there's Roman Holiday and Rear Window. And I forgot. I mean, and you're right. You're right. This is not
so
a good
when
movie.
Did you change your mind about this movie?
I don't know.
Where were we in the film when you're like, okay.
I think it was probably when they had him trapped in the warehouse, you know, and it just was really dragging.
I have a more mundane moment when I lost all hope, which is when the Army General Major Smith or whatever, completely boring character, walks in with the girl. And she sits down and calls another corporal on the phone. And because he has nothing else to do in the scene, he takes an army jacket off, hangs it up, gets another jacket that is, I think, identically the same, and puts it on in the span of her phone call. And then you even have the guys, you hear the guys, because then he gets on the phone and the guys in the theater are like, yes, I'm the same guy in the same office. I mean, because what did you think we weren't going to notice that's his blocking?
I guess they wouldn't.
Was there a moment when that actor was like, are you sure you want me to do this in this scene?
No, I guarantee not.
He just went with it.
Yeah. Like, well, sure. Because they wouldn't even know. If you're on a movie set, you get so disoriented, I think, even if you're the actor, you don't know what is going on.
Well, and I guess the idea is that they thought, and maybe it's true, that the average 50s viewer was so kind of dumb and new to movies that they would just be watching the girl and they wouldn't really notice what he's doing. So they just needed to give him some background action and nobody would actually be watching him.
It would be really fascinating to get in a time machine and go back to a movie theater and watch people watching this movie when it actually came out and see if they just thought this was really dumb.
Or really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, the special effects.
Like look at that giant guy. Yeah. Or like, oh my God,
this is
some B-movie crap.
Was this anywhere near, I asked questions like, was it anywhere near the first giant guy movie, you know? The first movie where they
We know it wasn't because it's a sequel.
Right, but okay, so one of the first.
Yeah.
Is it early enough that was like super amazing, or was it more later when they had done that a million times already?
Okay, I wrote down some of my favorite riffs.
Yeah.
Can I deliver some of my favorite riffs?
Yeah, let's hear it.
These are just some good ones. When I think it's Kevin says, can I have a to-go cup for that gin?
Oh, yeah.
That's such a 50s line.
Uh-huh.
And actually,
so they're always drinking.
Oh, they're always drinking. They're always drinking.
The first thing that the two army men come in full regalia and uniform, and they sit down with the sister, and she's like, can I get you a drink? And it's like... They're like army guys in full uniform. They're here to talk to you about your sad brother turned into a giant.
Life was boring, man. It was all in black and white. Yeah, got us some gin.
You got a little whiskey.
Get through that black and white. But my favorite riff from the whole movie, just because it kind of sums up the whole thing, is I don't even remember what's happening on screen. Oh, it's when the guy's driving. Because there's so many driving scenes in these movies.
Yeah.
And Kevin, I think, says, that's right, spare us nothing, Bert. Because this is a Bert I. Gordon movie, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's true, like, there's so much. I mean, in a modern movie, we wouldn't see any of this stuff.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't.
Nobody opens a door and leaves a room.
Mm-hmm.
They just head for the door and then they cut.
I remember there's a part in towards the end where they find the giant guy and they're already shining lights on him. And then there's just 10 minutes where I don't actually know what is going on. Like everyone's just shining lights at him. they found him, and he's like, oh, you found me, you know? And then it's like, well, okay, you mean you came here to shoot him down, so what are you doing?
Yeah.
And they just kind of standing around.
I guess it must be a lot harder to write a script for a movie these days because you can't just, like, have one good line and then rest on your laurels for 10 minutes.
No, yeah, I think you have to keep punching it. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think what they were doing is it's the kind of thing where I think they were writing it so quickly and hastily that they wrote this script and they got to the filming towards the end of it. And they're like, oh, this movie's way too short. And so then they wedged in the whole thing about the school bus, you know,
right?
Like right in the middle of it, they're like, okay, well they found him already. And we're only like 45 minutes.
And
into
the kids,
film.
Like the 13-year-old kids that are supposedly making out, except they're not making out because it's the 50s.
Yeah, they just wedged that in at the end because they needed another 10 minutes of film of movie.
Man.
And when you see the scene of the kids in the school bus and they're all going, whoa, they're like waving from one side to the other and they're screaming, you watch it and you get the impression they just filmed that like in post. They like they edited the whole thing down and they're like, oh crap, we're like 5 minutes short. And they just found some kids and they put them on a bus.
Yeah.
Like, go like this. Wah!
Like in a video game when you introduce a side quest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, you've reached the final dragon, but
oh,
wait.
Man. You need to collect 10 pig skulls.
10,000 turtles. Yeah. Yeah. The kids on the school bus are the 10,000 pig skulls for sure.
Okay, I wrote down a couple other riffs. When I think it's Trey says, General Smooth makes his move.
Yeah, because he's hitting on the sister the
constantly,
whole movie. There's one general character who has no function except to hit on the grieving sister whose brother is probably going to die and has been hit by a bazooka.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, you want to go out?
And then I got one more, which is, and so in, I mean, I guess they do this in modern movies sometimes, but they do a lot less of it. In the 50s and 60s and even 70s, they had a lot of, I think they're called establishing shots.
Yeah.
Where they would just show like a physical landscape.
Yeah.
And there's one where they show that hotel and then Kevin says, guests of the Colossal Beast stay at the Beverly Hilton.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing's supposed to be in LA, right?
Yeah. Well, it's in Mexico and then... Because I think the first movie was in Vegas, and then you're supposed to believe that after he got shot by a bazooka, which in the first movie, I feel like it feels like he's dead, but then they wanted to make a sequel.
Right.
So they're like, oh no, he walked to Mexico somehow.
So do you figure it worked the same way in the 50s where they were like, oh crap, this movie's actually making a lot of money. I guess we need to make another one.
No, I don't think I don't think it's about making money. I think it's more about the little B movie studios are like, hey, that thing, we need more movies like that. We need another giant movie, you know, giant guy in a movie. And they're like, well, why don't we just do a sequel to the first giant guy? I don't think it's because they made a lot of money. I think it's just because they needed to fill time before the A movie. Like I said, I think it was in service to like the quote real movie that you're there to see.
I don't know. I'm not buying that. I think this must have done better than they expected, because why not just make a different giant monster movie? I mean, they did a lot of that too. I think this did better. I mean, because the first movie, what is it? The Colossal Man or what?
I think it's Amazing Colossal Man.
I mean, that movie is actually somewhat well known.
Why didn't they just bring back the actual cast then?
I have no
idea.
Like,
this is a totally
did the same thing. You know what it reminds me of is Mortal Kombat. Do you remember Mortal Kombat, the first movie?
I remember the first movie.
And then it did a lot better than they thought it would.
Yeah.
Because it actually had some heart. Yeah. And then they were like, oh, crap, we really need to make another one. But all of the people in the first one were gone.
Oh.
I mean, because people move on. They have like professional careers and they get booked for other things. And nobody thought they were ever going to make another one.
Or so, actors also get more expensive over time.
Totally. And so then they were like, we need to make a second one. So the second Mortal Kombat movie has a completely different group of people in it.
Yeah.
Like Johnny Cage is a different guy. Mm-hmm. I think, if I remember right. I never saw it because it's terrible.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, it's like they did it with Home Alone too. Made a Home Alone 3 and they recast the kid.
Home Alone. We have to talk about Home Alone on a different episode.
Yeah.
Did I ever We'll do that a different time.
Okay.
How I went to Poland and saw Home Alone.
Oh, no, I don't
know.
Did I
tell you this? Or, yeah, okay, anyway. So. Anyway, I see by the clock on the wall, we should probably give this a rating.
Okay.
So, I don't know. You went first last time. I feel like it would be fair of me to go first this time. This is so tough because I don't really know what to do with a movie like this where the short is just so excellent. The
short's an 11
out of 10.
And
then the movie is bad. Yeah. Although I will say, despite everything, I don't think this movie is the worst. I mean, I think the riffing's pretty good.
It's not the worst movie they ever watched.
No, it's far from the worst. So, okay, let me think about it for just a second. Oh, it's going to be dead air for the podcast. Maybe I'll have to edit this out. I am going to give the whole package here. You know what? I'm going to go a little high. I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
Because the short is so good.
Yeah.
And the movie is bad, but I never found myself wishing desperately for death the way I did during like that Space Ranger movie.
Maybe a little bit in the middle. I was kind of wishing for death a bit.
But... Well, I had a beer, so that helped.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go as high as 7. I might regret that later, but I think this could be a 7 for me.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I think I mostly agree. I think I rated it a 7 a long time ago, and I know watching it, I understand that I did that because I was sort of saying to myself, well, Joel is really funny in this episode. Some of the riffs during the movie are really good. Some of them are not so good. The short is amazing and just like epically memorable. And the movie's really bad. So when you throw all that, you know, in a blender and mash it up, it comes out to about a 7.
Joel is really good in this movie.
He's really good.
Like if you wanted to make a case for why Joel was the better host,
you show this one.
You would watch this one.
Yeah.
He's really on.
Show him that dumb Mexa Changarita opening sketch.
And Bro Hero Hito Rito.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got this thing where he's like got this Midwestern comedy that you actually don't find in Hollywood very much at all.
No, you
I'm
don't.
Trying to think of somebody who's like him, and the best I can think of is Mitch Hedberg. You know, he's got that kind of like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, you feel it's refreshing if you've been watching just like Hollywood stuff.
Right.
And then you watch an episode of like Joel era Mystery Science
right,
Theater.
Because it's not dependent on you being super smart. He's not trying to like outsmart you.
No.
He's not witty.
Yeah. No, not really.
He's just pointing out the absurdity of like life.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is great. It's
right.
funny, and we need more of it.
Yeah.
We need more Joels. God bless him.
Yeah, we need more shows filmed in Minnesota.
I think so. I think it's a fatal flaw that most of TV and movies is filmed in one place.
Yeah.
In America.
Right.
I think that's a mistake.
Okay. What else can we say about either War of the Colossal Beast or quote unquote Mr. B Natural? That whole skit where they're doing the debate about whether it's a guy, whether it's a man or a woman.
I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
I think that if there's one conclusion, it's that maybe this is actually my favorite short that they ever watched or the one that they did the best with.
It's got to be the most memorable one. I mean, there's some other excellent competitors like What to Do on a Date.
Yeah.
Or that one where the kid winds up loose at the World's Fair.
Yeah.
There's
looking forward to Hired, which is the one about the salesman.
Yeah.
Sort of, that one's really good.
The Chicken of Tomorrow.
Chicken of Tomorrow is really good.
It's pretty good.
You know, I will say, I do think they started watching these shorts just to sort of pad their own episodes. But I think now they recognize how funny those things can be.
Oh,
And now you see them just do like... The new Mystery Science Theater has a whole section on their website where they just watch shorts.
Well, and I mean, I think one part of that is in the TikTok era, the idea of getting people to watch an hour and a half long show is pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah. But the game is different, for sure.
I mean, Mr. B Natural can't be more than 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it's so funny.
So funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting because you and I are going next month to see Riff Tracks live, and they're going to do that. I think they're watching a bunch of shorts.
Oh,
and it's like night, like Shorts of Palooza or Night of the Shorts.
Okay,
and those are great because every 10 minutes you just context switch. Like if you're getting bored or something, like you said, TikTok style, you're just on to the next topic.
Yeah.
You never watch The Chicken of Tomorrow for an hour.
God, The Chicken of Tomorrow is so good. And The Chicken of Tomorrow, not to get off topic, but I guess it's the same with Mr. B Natural, so it is on topic, but they always have a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And the kid is like the protagonist.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's really shoehorned in.
Probably because they're showing them in schools. I think that's a lot of why that is.
Well, that's definitely true for Mr. B Natural, but is that true for Chicken of Tomorrow?
Yeah, because it's like vaguely educational. Like it was one of those things.
Like home ec style?
They were doing this even in the 90s. Like it was when the teacher didn't want to teach class and just wanted to set a TV down.
Did that happen to you?
Oh yeah, a couple of times.
I can't actually remember that happening.
It'd often be like towards the end of a term, like a semester or a quarter, and like it'd be like, all right, we already took the final exam and we just need to fill, like it's when teachers need to become like babysitters, basically.
Well, I do remember us doing random things, but I don't remember us just watching educational films.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like there was this lady that was a substitute teacher, and she made us do logic puzzles.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
No, I remember there was a guy like Mr. Turner, who was a substitute.
Yeah, Mrs. Turner's husband.
Yeah. So when he would sub class, sometimes he'd just bring in a movie.
Huh.
An educational thing.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Do you remember the lady that drove a truck that would do the logic puzzles?
No.
Maybe you didn't have her. No. I don't know. You know, logic puzzles,
before
right?
Before my time.
Like
yeah.
Alice, Brad, Charlie, and Dave went to A, B, C, and D restaurant on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Well, we had I remember that we would take a exam or something, and then the next day as a reward, that teacher that taught, the pertinent facts in focus lady, history or something.
Yeah.
Would just wheel in some stupid movie about the Civil War or something. And we'd just sit and you wouldn't even have to watch it. You could just, kind of read a book at your desk or sleep or,
Right.
I would pass out a lot of times because it was dark, they'd turn the lights off and there'd be this movie on and nobody could even see you. So you just kind of sort of snooze off a little bit into dreamland.
And so you think that would be Mr. B Natural?
I think in the 50s and 60s, that was what you saw.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Or it might have even been more insidious. It might have been that music company would go to the schools and sell the schools on they would give the school some money and be like, show this to all your kids.
When?
In class. It's the 60s, man. Different rules.
I guess.
I don't think it was as educated and regulated, as it is now.
Okay. Well, anyway, any final thoughts, Mr. B Natural, War of the Colossal Beast?
No, great short bad movie.
I mean, it's good stuff, right?
Yeah.
We could have done so much worse today than this one.
I wish I could explain why they decided to make him a grunting beast in this one instead of an actual guy. But I'll never know.
No.
We'll never be able to ask anyone. They're all long dead.
Maybe he's got a terrible speaking voice.
Maybe they cast a guy and they were like, we like his body and his face, but not a good actor.
Yeah.
So why don't you just grunt and we'll make up a story about how the bazooka blast killed your brain or something.
Fix it in post.
And then at the end, he says like one name. He says like his sister's name and then he goes and kills himself. It is so depressing. The most depressing. God.
Okay, on that note, I guess we'll see you guys next time.
Okay, next time.
War of the Colossal Beast.
You sing a baby a lullaby and it coos.
The lullaby by, go away.
As natural as you can be.